I smiled. Spencer had hinted all week that she had something special planned.
But no hallway looks as good as the seniors, he said. Like, not even close.
It was exactly what I'd hoped to hear, and now there was only one thing left for me to check on.
Did you notice if Connor dropped off the bonfire wood? I asked.
Deepak shrugged.
I don't think it's here yet.
I tipped my head back. I should have called him last night to remind him. I hated depending on other people. There was too much of a chance for them to let me down.
You have Connor's phone number?
Deepak sounded surprised.
No,
I admitted, slightly insulted. Was it totally out of the realm of possibility that I would?
The Hughes Christmas tree farm is in the phone book.
Miss B appeared in the hallway. She wore a navy A-line dress with gray leather pumps and several strands of thick white pearls, looking equal parts school spirity and expertly put together. I wondered, did someone like Miss B even own a pair of sweatpants?
Natalie, I've had such fun wandering the halls this morning. The school looks wonderful.
She placed a hand on my shoulder.
I believe the fire chief is planning to come sometime between second and third period to take a last check of the bonfire set up before he signs off on the permit. Do you know if everything's ready to go?
We'll be good to go,
I promised. At least, I hoped we would be. A few minutes later, Autumn ran up. She pushed on my shoulders and pinned me against my locker.
What are you doing?
I laughed.
Painting your face,
she said, pressing the tip of a white greased crayon against my cheek.
You don't look school spirity enough for student council president.
I had been so busy with the preparations, I hadn't thought much about what to wear. I chose a plain blue sweatshirt, a pair of jeans, and my gym sneakers. I guess it was kind of blah.
Stop moving,
she warned me.
Nothing too big, okay?
I said, glancing at the feather that took up the entire side of Autumn's head.
Shh,
she said. I let Autumn paint me and enjoy the buzz and fever and excitement in the hallway. I felt on top of the world until Martin came up and said,
Natalie, we have a serious problem.
What, the wood? It's still not here?
I searched around for Connor Hughes and started to panic. What if Connor never planned to bring the wood in the first place, just to make me look bad? What if this was a big joke made at my expense because I'd beaten Mike Domsky in the election? Martin shook his head.
No, I mean, I don't know if the wood is here yet or not, but that's not the problem.
I stepped out of the way of Autumn's crayon.
What's the problem?
Nick DeVito has the flu.
So what?
So, there's no one to dress up as Ross the Eagle for tonight's game.
Can't we get one of the freshman reps to do it?
I can try, but a lot of those kids are on the freshman teams or in band.
What about Deepak?
Deepak has serious claustrophobic issues.
He'd hyperventilate inside the costume.
What about you?
I asked, my eyes narrowing.
I'm supposed to be selling the merchandise at the game.
I took a deep breath. Martin, are you telling me that I'm going to have to be Ross the Eagle tonight? He nodded solemnly.
Yes, Miss President.
Come on, hold still.
Autumn said, grabbing my face and steadying her crayon.
Promise me you won't get this stressed out and miserable over every student council thing this year, okay? Everything is fine. The hallway looks great. Relax. Let's have fun.
Okay, okay, I said. She had a point. It was time to enjoy the fruits of my labor. Suddenly, it was way too loud in the hallway. Connor Hughes and other seniors on the football team, dressed in jeans and their jerseys, headed to their lockers in a pack. Everyone cheered.
Sorry, Autumn, I said, pulling away from her. Give me a second. The greasy crayon squiggled wildly to my earlobe, but I didn't care.
Connor!
I shouted as loudly as I could, trying to push my way toward him.
The wood?
Connor turned around and looked confused, possibly at the blob on my face. Then he gave me a thumbs up. The wood had arrived. Everything was going to be fine. There was another noise. Music. A dancey song that I knew from the radio, only played faster and with more bass, growing steadily louder. The crowd suddenly parted. Autumn and I found ourselves pushed backward until we were pressed up against the lockers. I stood on my tiptoes. 10 freshman girls marched down our hallway in 2 lines, as if they were in a parade. They were led by Spencer. She had a pink iPod strapped to her bicep, and she was holding 2 white portable speakers, 1 in each hand. She strutted like a model on a runway. Autumn jumped, straining to see.
Doesn't she know that freshmen aren't allowed in the senior hallway on pep rally day?
Of course, rules like that were ridiculous. You could go anywhere you wanted. Still, they were rules, and there seemed to be lots of them Spencer didn't know. The girls had their hair up in ponytails, tied with curls of white satin ribbon, and white terry cloth shorts that were way too short for any real athletic activity. I didn't recognize all of them, but I did spot Susan Choi, who was another one of my freshman reps. Each wore the same fitted blue, child-sized t-shirt. Murmurs and whispers overtook the cries of, "Go home, freshmen!" as the girls strutted by to the beat. I heard laughter, whistles, catcalls. I pushed forward to the edge of the crowd. Each shirt had a pair of bulbous footballs positioned like pasties over their boobs. And above them, the same single word was printed across the chest, curling in a perfect arch. Rostitute. Autumn shook her head.
What the hell?
The girls passed, and I noticed that underneath each swishing ponytail tip, the name and number of a varsity player was printed across the backs of the shirts. Domsky, 27, Phillips, 4, and on the back of Spencer's, Hughes, 14. Suddenly, it hit me, like an SAT vocab word after breaking down the root. Ross Academy plus prostitute equals rostitute. The realization seemed to trickle out of my head and through the crowd. I saw delight on the faces of the football team and sneers on the faces of the cheerleaders. Suddenly, the freshman girls stopped on a dime. Spencer made the music go full blast. They changed formation from 2 lines into a diamond shape and then began to dance. Most of the girls looked painfully awkward. They were stiff and nervous, spinning at the wrong time, keeping their eyes on Spencer for cues. Spencer was different, and I could definitely tell that, yes, she was a good dancer. She confidently made her way through the routine, keeping eye contact with people watching her, even though her curls were swishing in her face. Her moves were simultaneously precise and sexy as hell. She was the star of this show. Miss B reached out and grabbed Spencer by the arm. I had never seen her look so mad. A few people actually booed Miss B for stopping the dance. Mostly guys, from the sound of it. Miss B looked around the hallway, possibly for me. I moved my head so it was behind someone else's. I was that embarrassed, and I didn't want to get involved. The hallway got quiet, except for the music. Everyone was watching what was going to happen. I felt like I couldn't breathe. "These shirts are highly offensive, Spencer," Miss B said. "Not to mention completely against school policy. You girls must change immediately." It was almost like slow motion, watching Spencer grin. I only saw it for a second before her face got covered up, because she took off her shirt right there in the middle of the hallway. Her bra was a pink gingham number with a tiny rosette in the center, underwire working overtime to hoist and enhance a modest amount of cleavage. The grin returned as a shirtless Spencer twisted the wad of material in her hands.
"I'll turn it inside out, Miss B," she said.
Problem solved.
The hallway erupted again. It was pure energy, and the freshmen were drunk on it. The other girls grabbed at the hems of their shirts, too, but before anyone else could strip, Miss B had their leader by the arm and dragged her down the hallway. As Spencer passed me, she winked. Chapter 11.
I honestly don't think it's going to rain, Autumn said, beaming her big smile up at the ominous sky as if it could intimidate the storm clouds. We just need to stay positive.
I'm positive this sucks.
Aren't you having any fun in there?
Autumn hid a smile by puckering her lips around the straw in her Coke.
I mean, you look awesome.
I rolled my eyes, forgetting that Autumn couldn't see my face through the small, square patch of mesh. As if this morning's rostitute parade wasn't humiliating enough, now I'm entombed in the bowels of a stuffed animal carcass.
Oh, and don't forget that all of the local weather reports neglected to mention the monsoon clouds threatening to obliterate my bonfire. This truly is the definition of awesome. Seriously, look it up and you'll find a picture of me.
Though the wind was steadily picking up, it was still hot and itchy inside Ross the Eagle. The oversized head smelled like the very bottom of a laundry basket, or the underwear that doesn't fit anymore, or the socks that have holes stay unwashed for a long, long time. I felt like I was going to barf if I didn't get fresh air, so I tried to get my wings underneath the rim of the eagle head. Autumn pinched my beak.
You can't take your head off on the sidelines. Look at all the little kids around. Remember how freaked out I was after we saw Headless Big Bird smoking a cigarette in the Sesame Place parking lot? You're lucky I'm even standing this close to you right now.
What's worse, that or having Ross the Eagle die on the sidelines from heat stroke?
Come on, Autumn, I'm so thirsty.
She guided the straw of her Coke through the mesh.
Here, the game's almost over anyhow.
Just as I sucked up some soda, the crowd behind us roared. Autumn turned away, taking the can with her, but leaving the straw dangling out of my mouth. I spat it out.
Since when do you like football?
I asked, spinning around to match the field up with the mesh window. Connor Hughes lobbed a pass that fell out of Mike Domsky's waiting hands. A ref blew his whistle, and a St. Anne's player tore off his helmet and screamed at his teammates until his cheeks turned purple. Connor sank to the ground and pounded his fists on his thighs. He was mad, too. Madder, even. Though I didn't get why. We were winning 21-0. He'd thrown all 3 touchdowns. Our band kicked into the school fight song, and I groaned.
How many times are they going to play this?
Autumn patted me on the back.
It's showtime!
I shuffled the length of the sideline as mascot duty called for. I would have jogged to get it over with quicker, but the big, yellow, plastic eagle claws strapped over my sneakers made it hard to do anything fast. I didn't go the extra mile, like Nick DeVito would, and ham it up for the crowd with cartwheels and pogo bounces and fist bumps. I basically just paced and flapped and prayed that the rain would stay away. On the upside, with every lap, I got to check out the pile of wood. I had to admit, Connor had really come through. There was a ton of logs and branches from his family's Christmas tree farm all propped together in a big pyramid that was practically as tall as the snack shed. A group of firefighters in yellow reflective gear, heavy black boots, and helmets stood nearby. They split their time between watching the game and the sky. As I reached the end of my lap, the floodlights turned on, and the last of the summer bugs swarmed in a fuzzy cloud under the glow. When I looked back down, I saw Spencer and her now infamous pack of rostitutes returning to the bleachers, carrying trays of nachos. The punishment for their shirts hadn't come down yet. Decisions and precedent needed to be considered. As upset as I was at Spencer, it was hard to say what should happen. What they did wasn't as bad as fighting or stealing or defacing school property, but the punishment still needed to make a statement.
I don't know why you're so mad,
Autumn had said to me after the Rostitutes had left the hallway. This doesn't have anything to do with you. Autumn was probably right, but it didn't make me feel better. More than anything, I was disappointed. After all, I'd tried. I'd tried to help Spencer in the bathroom that day. I'd tried to get her involved with student council, and she went and ruined all that goodwill. Not to mention, completely stole the attention away from my hard work with the senior hallway. It was kind of infuriating, the sorts of things that got you noticed at our school. I started to make my way back to Autumn when Spencer pointed at me and shrieked. The whole group of Rostitutes veered away from the bleacher steps and surrounded me in a fit of giggles.
Is that you in there, Nick DeVito?
Spencer cooed. I couldn't wait to tell her that it was actually me inside the eagle suit. I wanted Spencer to feel like a total idiot. I wanted to embarrass her, show her how ridiculous she was acting. But before I could get the words out, she grabbed one of my wings and started dancing, forcing me to be her partner. I stepped back, but Spencer stepped closer, grinding up on my leg.
Don't be scared of me, Mr. Eagle, she cried. I won't hurt you.
As I wrestled to get away, I slipped on a bit of damp grass and nearly fell flat on my face. A few other Rostitutes huddled around me, catching my fall. As I stumbled, I spotted Autumn a few feet away. She watched with stunned horror.
Someone take a picture of us with the eagle, Spencer cried.
I flapped my wings so they couldn't get too close, but the Rostitutes closed in and pinned them to my side. I finally went limp just to get it over with.
Make sure you zoom in nice and tight,
Spencer instructed Susan Choi, who was holding the camera. Before they could get a shot, I heard our principal's voice booming from behind.
All right. Settle down, girls. Go and have a seat.
Principal Hurley waved his hands, dispersing the Rostitutes. Principal Hurley was the oldest faculty member of Ross Academy, a bald man, stern and broad like an army officer, who wore a three-piece suit every single day, and he sounded more annoyed than I'd ever heard him. Miss B walked over.
Are those girls causing more trouble?
I prayed that Martha and I wouldn't have daughters for this very reason, Principal Hurley sighed.
Miss B looked up at the sky.
Well, if you care for my opinion, I think the ones who just wore the shirts should get a week of detention. But the ringleader, Spencer, I think we need to make an example of her.
3-day suspension?
Miss B nodded.
Whoa. Suspension?
The anger I felt toward Spencer turned to pity. She wasn't a bad girl, just misguided. A black mark like this on her permanent record might ruin her chance of getting into a decent college. All because she'd done something so incredibly stupid. And for what? To impress Connor?
Principal Hurley nodded back. I'll call them all into my office first thing Monday morning. I'd like you there, since this was partly a student council event.
Yes, of course. I took off toward the fence, but Autumn was gone. I hoped she'd gone to get me a bottle of water or something, but I didn't want to stand there waiting by myself and risk getting accosted again. The only safe place was near the football team's bench. As I shuffled over, a roar erupted from the home bleachers. Mike Domsky had dropped another one of Connor's passes on third down. Our offense headed to the bench and defense took the field. Some of the lesser players tossed around plastic bottles and towels to the guys who had returned. Bobby Doyle took off his helmet and stretched his arms over his head.
I'm ready for this game to be over.
I've never seen someone stretch as often as Bobby Doyle. He wants to give people a peek at the Chinese characters sneaking across his pelvis. He was so proud that he could get a tattoo without being 18, using his older brother's ID. I thought it looked corny, and I've heard most of those Chinese letter forms don't even mean what the tattoo places say they do. I wished I had a photographic memory, then I could have researched them and told Bobby that his tattoos didn't mean strength and courage, but rather something ridiculous like shiny fat rabbit. Mike Domsky fake-punched Bobby.
You wouldn't be so tired if you weren't such a tub of lard. You're only allowed to drink light beer tonight.
Bobby laughed. Dude, need I remind you that the party's at my house, and that the beer you're referring to, which is currently chilling on ice, is mine, and the hot tub that I turned on at lunch to be nice and toasty is also mine?
Bobby Doyle's family was really rich and had a separate guest house just for him. It was basically party central for our school, and it wasn't even nice because he lived like a pig with empty beer cans strewn all over the place and holes punched into the walls. Or at least that's what I'd heard.
I just hope this stupid bonfire thing is over quick, Mike said. Hey, Connor, please tell us you soaked those logs in kerosene.
Connor shook his head.
Fine. I guess it's up to me to save us.
And then Mike started to hop up and down. He slapped his hand over his mouth. A rain dance. I clenched my fists. If the football team left early from the bonfire, I swore I'd make a huge scene. I'd throw Ross the Eagle's head right into the fire. Connor grabbed a protein bar from inside his duffel bag.
Come on, guys. The game isn't over. Can we please concentrate on the business at hand? Tell you what, I'd like to make that Spencer girl's titties my business,
Mike said with a laugh. My mouth dropped open. Oh my God. James Rocker squirted some water in his mouth, swished it around, and spat it back out.
She's not that hot.
Mike sighed.
Dude, it doesn't even matter, because she's eager. Did you see her dancing? I mean, she's practically a stripper.
Coach Fallon jogged over with his clipboard.
All right, we've got 2 more minutes. Second string, get in there and try not to screw up.
Connor looked like he still wanted to play, but ultimately he crashed on the bench and started pulling off his cleats without bothering to untie them first.
Come on, Connor,
James said.
Spencer had your name on the back of her shirt, lucky bastard.
Connor shrugged.
I thought that whole thing was pretty dumb.
I could hardly believe my ears. Connor and I actually agreed on something.
Dumb, yes, but Spencer and those girls were trying to send us all a message. They want us,
Mike said matter-of-factly.
And if Connor isn't into Spencer, I'm next in line.
She wants Connor, not you,
James said.
You think a girl like her will turn celibate because Connor shuts her down? Trust me, man. The Domsky will make it happen. And none of you guys better try and cockblock me.
My stomach rolled. The fact that Spencer actually liked Connor didn't matter. She made them all believe she was the kind of girl who'd take whatever she could get.
Fine. I call the short one with the dimples,
James called. Connor laughed.
You have a girlfriend, dude.
James acted like he'd forgotten this.
Biggest mistake of my life. No one should have a girlfriend in high school. It, like, completely defeats the purpose. Mark my words, this time next week, Melanie and I are done.
I thought about poor Melanie Walsh in the bleachers, sitting next to James's mom. She practically worshipped James and always wrote in these long, detailed notes with 4 different color pens during homeroom. Bobby looked off into the bleachers, shielding his eyes from the floodlights.
That skinny blonde freshman would be cute if she weren't totally flat. I might as well feel up my little brother.
James joined him.
I'd pick her over Mindy Polchik.
Mindy was a sophomore. Her dad worked at the same architecture firm as my mom.
I mean, Mindy does gymnastics and shit, but you still have to look her in the face.
I wish that I could have a tape recorder on me so I could show Spencer and those girls exactly what the guys they desperately chased after really thought of them. The prostitutes were just sluts, girls to use and cast aside.
What about Sterling?
Bobby asked. My entire body burned 1,000 degrees. I didn't want to hear what they had to say about me. I didn't want to hear their jokes, their put-downs. But I couldn't move. I had to listen. Mike Domsky stuck out his tongue and made gagging sounds.
She's the kind of chick who'd cut off your balls in the middle of the night. Wait, actually, I wouldn't be surprised at all to hear Natalie Sterling has a bigger dick than I do.
I wanted nothing more than to walk over and give Mike Domsky a kick between the legs. Only, it was more embarrassing to let the guys know I'd been standing there the whole time, listening to them say all these disgusting things.
She has a decent face,
James said. I crossed my wings smugly. But really? What was I doing? Feeling proud about some weak compliment? And who did these guys think they were, judging me? I wasn't like Spencer. I wasn't putting myself out there to be looked at, evaluated. I wonder how they'd like it if I talked about Mike Domsky's overly hairy arms, or how James was so short that any girl who wanted to take him to a dance would have to wear flats, or the chickenpox scars dimpling the back of Bobby's neck. Connor lifted his head and made a scrunched up face.
Whatever, man. You're still mad that Sterling kicked your ass in the election. And threw that pizza bomb at you, which was classic. That girl is seriously tough. I wouldn't mess with her.
I felt a swell of something inside me. Maybe it was shock or pride that Connor Hughes defended me. Just then, there was a huge crack of thunder, the kind that echoes in your chest. Some of the girls in the bleachers screamed. A second later, the sky opened up, pouring rain fast and hard. In a matter of seconds, my costume was soaked through. All I could think about was my bonfire. I had to get something to cover the wood, or else my first big act as student council president would be washed out. I tried to run, but I slipped on the grass and fell hard, right on my back. The whole crowd said, "Oh!" I tried to get up, but it was totally impossible. The ground was too slick, and the costume stuck to me like a straitjacket. I felt a pair of hands hoist me up to my feet.
Careful there, DeVito.
I turned, and there was Connor. And I swear he looked through the mesh window and saw it was me.
You okay?
He asked quietly. I wanted to say yes, and thank you, but I was also completely mortified by what I just overheard. I ripped my arm free and hobbled toward Autumn, off in the rainy distance. Her hair was saturated, stringy and sticking to her face. I watched her shimmy halfway up the wood pile, trying to get a blue tarp stretched over the top. She was fighting a losing battle to keep the wood dry, an army of one. No one else helped her. I ran up and extended my arm.
Come down. It's not safe.
I've almost got it. Run over to the other side and I'll...
Autumn, forget it. There's no way we're still having the bonfire. Even though I knew this was the truth, it still hurt to admit it. Autumn tipped her head back and rain splashed off her cheeks.
Are you sure? I think it might be slowing down.
Another crack of thunder shook the air. I grabbed Autumn's hand, helped her down, and together we took off running for my car. The whole ride home, I had the chills. Not because I was soaking wet, because the bonfire was ruined, because Spencer was an idiot, because I was so upset and disgusted by what I'd heard, because Connor may have caught me eavesdropping. I told Autumn about the terrible things I'd overheard, only leaving out what Connor had said about me, since that wasn't the point. I knew the way the guys talked about the girls would make her upset, but I still wanted her to know. If anything, it would keep something like last weekend's party incident from happening again.
These were not the kinds of people we should be associating with. Autumn knew exactly what those girls were in for. It put a heavy silence over the car. But how could I get it through Spencer's thick skull that she was making some really bad choices? And the rest of the freshman girls, too. I wish there was a way I could help them like I'd helped Autumn.
It's too bad we can't take every girl in school to the young women's conference Miss B told me about, but it's all the way in Boston, and it's not until spring break.
Autumn turned her head.
What if you held your own women's summit, like at school?
It made immediate, total sense to me.
Autumn, you're a genius! I could basically replicate the entire thing. Lectures, discussions, we could run it together.
Autumn bit her nails.
I'll help you in any way I can, Natalie, but I really don't want...
That's when I told Autumn about that first day of school, about my ideas for changing freshman orientation. Autumn would be our guest speaker. She'd have a chance to stand out again, this time for something good, for something positive. Autumn looked down at her chewed-up fingernails, and then she said,
Can I ask you something? Without you getting mad.
Okay.
Did those guys say anything about me?
I shook my head. No. It was the truth, and I thought that would make Autumn feel good. Except it didn't. She rested her head against the window with a deep sigh and dragged her finger through the condensation in one long, sad streak. There was something severely wrong with the girls I knew.
Chapter 12. It rained the whole weekend, and by Monday morning, everything felt damp and bloated. The ground shimmered with slick fallen leaves, and thick mist hung in the air like the curtains on my bedroom windows. I pulled my hair back and walked across the lawn, grass squishing underneath my loafers, wetness seeping through the cracks in the leather, soaking the toes of my knee socks. But it didn't even bother me. I couldn't wait to get to school. I was on a mission. After the homeroom bell, I headed straight to the main office and sat on the bench outside Principal Hurley's office. Most of the Rostitutes were already there, waiting to hear their fate. The secretary called them in one by one. None of the girls made eye contact with me, except for Susan Choi, who managed a meek smile, which I did not return. She hid for the rest of the time behind a hefty paperback of The Lord of the Rings. Susan seemed like a nice girl. Quiet, studious, and obsessed with J.R.R. Tolkien. I noticed she always had her paperback open in her lap during student council meetings. Not the kind of girl you'd expect to be a Rostitute. Spencer clearly had a strong, magnetic quality about her. I had felt it even when she had approached me in the bathroom. Intervening felt like a necessity. Who knew what this freshman Pied Piper could do if she really hit her stride? Spencer arrived last, seconds before the first period bell. I heard her voice before I saw her, laughing and squealing from somewhere down the hall. Then she appeared, running as if danger were in hot pursuit. But she moved like she didn't really want to escape. As soon as she saw me, the smile dropped off her face. "We need to talk," I said.
"Don't you have to get to class?"
I hoped I could get a pass from the secretary, but even if I couldn't, if I got in trouble for sticking my nose in where it didn't actually belong, it still felt worth it. "For you, Spencer, I've got time."
Spencer shrugged and sat down on the bench next to me. "I know you're probably mad, but I didn't do anything wrong."
The defiance in her voice took me by surprise. I expected remorse, or at least some fear about her impending punishment.
"You were in your bra,"
I couldn't help but say,
"in the middle of the hallway." "I was not. That was my bathing suit, not my bra. The bathing suit I wear during first period swim class."
Her excuse took a little wind from my sail, but I stood strong.
Those shirts were really gross, Spencer. A prostitute? For the football team? Come on.
They were a joke!
She waited for me to be convinced.
Okay, look. The hallway probably wasn't the best place to change out of my shirt. And for that, I guess I'm sorry. But I still think people are making a big deal over nothing.
My stomach tightened. If Spencer tried to explain herself like that to Principal Hurley and Miss B, she might just get expelled.
You should work on a better apology ASAP. One that actually sounds sorry.
Do you know how much trouble you're in?
My eyes bounced all over her face.
Big trouble, I hissed. Humongous trouble. The office door opened, and Susan Choi exited. Her glasses were on top of her head, and she dabbed at her red eyes with a wrinkled-up wad of tissue. I imagined Susan had never so much as gotten a B before, never mind a week's worth of detention. I gave Spencer the eye, like, see? This is serious. But Spencer had her compact open and was patting powder on her T-zone. The secretary peered around the doorway and called for her.
You don't have to worry about me,
Spencer said sweetly, rising to her feet.
I can take care of myself, I swear.
She did not expect me to stand up and follow her, but that's exactly what I did.
Natalie, she whispered over her shoulder, what are you doing?
I'm saving your ass, I said and pushed past her. I had only seen the inside of Principal Hurley's office once before, when I was called in, with the rest of the academic decathlon team, to take a photo for the newspaper with our trophy. Being there, even under positive pretenses, still gave me an uneasy feeling. The air in his office felt like August, thick and uncomfortably warm. The cinder block wall had been painted a creamy beige, probably in the hopes of making what constituted a prison cell feel slightly more homey. He had no plants, no pictures, no decorations other than a huge vintage Ross Academy banner made of moth-eaten wool and with hand-stitched yellowing letters. Miss B stood in the corner, leaning against a set of tall filing cabinets. She looked surprised to see me.
This is a private meeting, Principal Hurley said.
Yes, Natalie, Miss B added. Stop by my office later. We'll talk then.
I ignored them both and sat in one of the overstuffed leather chairs facing Principal Hurley's desk. A gutsy move, for sure, but I needed to appear confident.
Principal Hurley, I have something to say.
He laced his fingers and nodded for me to go ahead, probably against his better instincts.
What happened on Friday was terrible. The behavior of these freshmen showed extremely poor judgment, but instead of punishing and isolating the girls involved, I think you're missing the chance to make this into a real learning experience, something every girl in our school could benefit from.
Principal Hurley looked over at Miss B, not exactly sure what to make of this. She had the tiniest smile on her face.
Go ahead, Natalie, she said.
The female population of Ross Academy is clearly focused on the wrong things. They value boys' attention over their own accomplishments. They're content with being objectified. The T-shirt incident was exactly that, a desperate attempt to be noticed, to proclaim subservience. It's as if our girls don't understand that they can be recognized for other things, their goals, their brains, not just their bodies. I fear that I sounded too rehearsed because I had rehearsed at least 10 times to my bedroom mirror, but I needed Principal Hurley to take me seriously. I wanted him to know I had thought this through. I pulled the pamphlet Miss B had given me out of my book bag.
I'd like to lead a seminar that would be mandatory for the girls involved in Friday's incident, but also open it up to any other girls at school who might like to participate.
Principal Hurley's face curdled.
An assembly? That hardly seems like a fitting punishment.
I had to think fast. I was actually thinking more of an overnight shut-in. We do workshops and discussions and get people to sponsor each of the hours we'd stay awake, which we'd donate to a women's shelter or something. It'd be a girl summit, an empowerment symposium.
A what?
Spencer asked. I shot her a look.
I think that for most of us, this would present an opportunity to discuss the recent events and maybe learn better behaviors and strategies moving forward. Instead of sweeping Friday's incident under the rug, we'd open up a dialogue about it. I want our girls to know that they are more than a sexual commodity, that they should have larger goals and aspirations for themselves.
Principal Hurley dropped his head to one side.
And you are willing to take this all on your shoulders? Why?
I had not anticipated this question, and suddenly I had a hard time organizing my thoughts. I thought of Autumn and all she had gone through. I looked over at Spencer, who was clueless. I cared so much about these girls, and if I could help save them, or anyone else at school from making a huge mistake, I gladly would.
Because this is important to me, Principal Hurley, and I won't be doing it alone. I'd like to run it with Spencer. For better or worse, Spencer showed real leadership on Friday, and I'd like to give her the opportunity to use that for good. And the extra responsibility, in addition to perhaps a week's detention, would make a fitting punishment, since she was the ringleader of the whole prostitute incident.
Spencer gazed over at me. Despite everything, she actually looked flattered by my compliments. I saw Principal Hurley working it over in his head as he stared at me. I stared right back. I knew that if I wanted to do this, I'd have to show some strength. Miss B looked like she might explode with pride.
I think this is a wonderful idea, Principal Hurley. Senior year is extremely busy, and yet Natalie's offering to carve out time to help guide the girls of Ross Academy to a more beneficial path.
Fine,
Principal Hurley said with a sigh.
This is a little unconventional for my tastes, but so long as Miss B agrees, we'll try your seminar.
Outside the office, Spencer cornered me immediately. For the record, I still don't think I did anything that bad. For the record, you were about to be suspended. She put her hands on her hips.
I'm not as stupid as you think I am. I know what I'm doing.
I suddenly remembered a few hissy fits Spencer had thrown in my babysitting days. I found that the best way to deal with her tantrums was to turn my back and walk away. So that's exactly what I did. I marched down the hall, and I didn't turn around when she started whining my name. Spencer was worse than a bratty little sister, but that didn't mean I couldn't get her to listen. First period had already started, so I hustled down the hall to the AP chemistry lab. When I rounded the corner, I saw Connor Hughes leaning into the water fountain. Part of me wanted to backtrack and take another staircase so I wouldn't have to pass him. A nervous energy buzzed through my chest. I still wasn't sure if Connor realized I'd been inside the Ross the Eagle suit, if he knew I'd heard the things they'd said. But purposefully dodging him would give Connor far too much power over me. So I kept walking, one foot in front of the other. He looked up from the stream of water. I saw this out of the corner of my eye, my senses heightening the way they do when someone's watching you. I became instantly conscious of my gait, borderline scampering, my body temperature, overheated from Principal Hurley's office, and my breath, cottony and stale. Once I had passed, he said,
"Hey, Sterling, aren't you going to thank me?"
I couldn't completely ignore him because that would appear too calculated, so I stopped. The classrooms around us all had their doors closed. We were alone.
"For what?"
I sounded defensive, accusatory. more so than I had planned, but even though he'd said some nice things about me at the football game, he had far from earned a free pass.
I got up early and loaded all that wood back into my truck so you wouldn't have to deal with it.
He held up his hands. They were rough and slightly dirty.
The logs were really wet and slippery. I got a couple of splinters, too. Deep ones. They might just cost me the next football game.
So Connor went out of his way to do me favors all of a sudden? I could hardly believe it. I felt myself starting to blush, so I pulled the elastic out of my hair and let it fall like a cloak.
You moved all that wood by yourself?
I asked.
Nah, I forced some of the JV kids to help me.
Well, I didn't ask you to do that.
I know you didn't,
he said, a split between annoyed and amused.
I felt bad that your little thing got rained out.
My little thing? I didn't need your help, I barked. I would have handled it. He pulled both hands through his hair. It still looked wet from his morning shower.
Geez, I was only looking for a thank you.
Well, you know what, Connor? Here's an important lesson. You can't always get what you want, even boys like you. I left him standing there, as baffled as he probably was in his remedial math class, and grinned at the empty hallway stretching in front of me. I was sure Connor had never been treated that way by a girl before. As with most things in life, it felt extremely good to be the first.
Chapter 13. At the end of the week, Miss B called me into her office to discuss my progress on the girls' night. I wondered if Spencer should be part of our conversation too, but ultimately I decided against it. There was something important, something personal, I needed to ask Miss B. We'd just finished a student council meeting. There were a lot of big projects on the horizon, like the fall flower sale and the Halloween dance, for which I would need a costume. I hadn't worn one since I was 12 and dressed as Double Helix. Miss B hung up her red cashmere sweater on her coat rack. I sat down in the chair across from her desk and looked around. A picture album sat on her desk, the kind that had a photo on the front. In this case, Miss B, sitting on a sandy-colored rock wall, overlooking the most beautiful ocean I'd ever seen. Barcelona, she told me. Her summer vacation. I was surprised when she opened the book and let me flip through as she narrated her trip. Suddenly, Miss B became less like a teacher and more like the kind of cool aunt who could talk your mother into letting you order a glass of red wine at a fancy restaurant. She pushed her hair back and fingered a pair of dangly, hammered gold earrings. She told me she'd haggled a man from 10 euros down to 3 at an outdoor bazaar. And when rain moved in, evidenced by a sky that grew dark then black in the photos, she fled to Milan on a whim.
When you travel alone, she explained with a wink, you are free to be unpredictable.
I bounced up and down in my chair and told Miss B that's exactly how I planned to backpack through Europe next summer, before college started. Miss B nodded, and her approval felt as good as a hug. We talked countries, possible stops along the way. I took out my notebook and took diligent notes. It was also the perfect segue.
Miss B, I was wondering if you'd consider writing me a recommendation letter for my college applications. I know it's only October, but I wanted to get a jump on things.
She smiled.
Of course, Natalie. In fact, this helps me a great deal. I can't tell you how inundated I get with these kinds of requests come March. Some students give me only a week's notice. If everyone could be as responsible and considerate as you, my job would be a lot easier, not to mention that it's been a complete pleasure having you in my classes and working with you in student council. So, yes, I would be honored to write you the most glowing recommendation in the history of recommendations.
Miss B, I can't thank you enough for all the help and attention you've given me this year. Really. She leaned back in her chair, and her eyes drifted off my face to just over my shoulder. A big, expectant smile bloomed on her face shortly thereafter.
So, tell me, how are things coming with your girls' night?
Truth was, it was slow. I'd had a ton of homework that week, not to mention cramming in as much SAT prep as I could. But I tried to dress it up. I'd figured out which charity the donations would go to and made a list of the food and snacks I'd have to buy. Miss B still seemed pleased.
I want to help you. She started pulling books off of her shelf. You should read The Feminine Mystique and, of course, The Beauty Myth, which will be highly relevant to your discussions. Oh, flip through The Woman's Bible and The Second Sex. I based my master's thesis on the work of Simone de Beauvoir.
As the books piled high on the corner of her desk, I tried to look excited, but really, I felt completely overwhelmed. I guess Miss B could tell, because she furrowed her eyebrows.
And Spencer, she is helping you, correct? That was part of the deal.
Yes, I lied. I mean, I knew Spencer would help me. We just hadn't had time to sit down with each other yet. Really, if that was anyone's fault, it was mine. I was the busy one.